Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TAILORMADE101.com for details. We have a very exciting show for you today. So hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap. Newt Gingrich pulls out an upset in South Carolina. Wow. I think he stunned the Manchurian candidate. That's right, Mitt Romney. So, is the former Speaker of the House poised to be the next GOP candidate? Now, have you been following SOPA? That is the Stop Online Piracy Act, or what is known in the Senate as PIPA, which is the Protect IP Act. It's heating up. We'll talk the details. Did you see Red Tails this weekend? We talk about the highlights of the movie. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button. Or, of course, follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old Ma Bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Before we get started, there is some breaking news. The Arizona Congressman Gabrielle Giffords will step down from the House this week. Now, ABC News is reporting Arizona Congressman Gabrielle Giffords will step down from the House this week and not seek re-election when her current term expires this year. She announced this today. Recall that on January 8, 2011, U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords and 18 other people were shot during a public meeting held in a supermarket parking lot near Tucson, Arizona. Six of those who shot died, including John Rowe, an Arizona District Court judge. Since that time, Giffords has made some stunning recoveries after being shot in the head. I want you to take a listen to this exclusive video.
Arizona is my home. Always will be. A lot has happened over the past year. We cannot change that. But I know on the issues we fought for, we can change things for the better. Jobs, border security, veterans, we can do so much more by working together. I don't remember much from that horrible day, but I will never forget the trust you placed in me to be your voice. Thank you for your prayers and for giving me time to recover. I have more work to do on my recovery, so to do what is best for Arizona. I will step down this week. I'm getting better. Every day, my spirit is high. I will return, and we will work together for Arizona and this great country. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I have to say that's pretty amazing, especially her recovery. Out of all the things that she went through, the fact that she was shot in the head, and then to be able to come back and still hold coherent sentences, to be able to walk around, enjoy her husband, to be able to at least know that she has some responsibilities and be cognizant of all of those things around her, that is an amazing feat. And our thoughts and prayers go out to her and her family. And I would like to especially recognize her husband for standing in there, for being there by her side during this terrible, terrible time. Also hot off the press today, longtime Penn State football coach Joe Paterno is dead. Multiple reports are saying longtime Penn State football coach, 85-year-old Joe Paterno, has passed away. Of course, all of this comes on the heels of his ousting at Penn State amid a child sex abuse scandal that scarred his reputation as the winningest coach in college football history. His family released the following statement to announce his death. I quote, "He died as he lived. He fought hard until the end. Stayed positive, thought only of others, and constantly reminded everyone of how blessed his life had been. His ambitions were far-reaching, but he never believed he had to leave this happy valley to achieve them. He was a man devoted to his family, his university, his players, and his community." Now, of course, there will be a lot of controversy around Joe Paterno, his life, as well as the events surrounding the child abuse scandal. So I'm sure there are going to be some mixed emotions with regard to this announcement. But nevertheless, anytime you lose a loved one, anytime a life is lost, you still want to acknowledge and recognize the family. And, of course, our prayers and thoughts go out to him as well. And speaking of losing someone, the African-American community and music industry, along with her family, lost an icon. Whom do you say I speak of? Well, it only takes the opening bars to describe it best. Come along. Those of you that who are familiar with this classic will not only recognize this song, but would also recognize the artist. That's right, Etta James. Etta James has gone on home, y'all. She died from complications from leukemia with her husband, Artis Mill, and her sons by her side. She was diagnosed with leukemia in 2010 and also suffered from dementia and hepatitis C. Etta James died at a hospital in Riverside, California. She would have turned 74 Wednesday. Now, this powerhouse singer known as Miss Peaches lived an eventful life. She first hit the charts as a teenager, taking the Wallflower, Roll With Me Henry, an answer record to Hank Ballard's Work With Me Annie, to number one on the R&B charts in 1955. She joined Chess Records in 1960 and had a string of R&B and pop hits, many with lustring arrangements. After a mid-decade fade, she reemerged in 1967 with a more hard-edged, soulful sound. Etta James was born Jamesetta Hawkins in Los Angeles to a teen mother and unknown father. Some suspect it was pool player Minnesota Fats. But nevertheless, we, of course, love you, Etta James. We wish your family the best. Alright, it's time for a break. And when we return, we talk sports, entertainment, and politics. And first up, the GOP presidential debate. And of course, South Kakalaki. That's South Carolina to the uninitiated. Also, we're going to take a look at the Manchurian candidate, Mitt Romney. Is he trying to hide something? What's up with those tax records? And what is the GOP? Why is it that the GOP don't like this guy? What is wrong with him? At any rate, we want to hear from you. Be sure to check out our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. This is where you will find a unique perspective and stimulating commentary on the current events. I invite you to check that out. But stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce the some and present the other, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, first up, I want to talk South Kakalaki, as I said. And, of course, that's South Carolina to those, to the uninitiated. Newt Gingrich wins. Actually, he pulled out an upset in South Carolina. What happened in South Carolina? How was he able to pull that off?
Well, I don't necessarily know if I believe it was that much of an upset, honestly. I mean, Mitt Romney has, to his own peril, not been the front runner, not acting as such for a while now. And Newt just saw an opportunity, you know, and seized the opportunity. Mitt Romney kind of made it easy for him with his lack of solid responses on the whole Bain Capital, with his taxes, which is really, both of them are really non-issues. But when you don't really answer people, you have people begin to question, well, why won't he release taxes? And it's not that people really care. I mean, we know you make a lot of money, and we know, leaked out about the things over there in the Cayman Islands and whatnot. So it's not as if we don't know that you got more money than most of us will ever see in our lifetime. So, you know, why are you not willing to show your taxes? So I think more than anything, Mitt Romney allowed Newt Gingrich to come in and, you know, I'm not even going to say he slid on the radar because everybody knew what Newt Gingrich was doing. He tried to play one way in Iowa, you know, talking about take down the ads, and he kind of played the congenial role in New Hampshire because he knew he really didn't have a leg to stand on. And he got down to his home turf, South Carolina, and he played it like he was supposed to. He played it like a champ. That's exactly what he did.
You know, I can't get my head wrapped around two things. One, you mentioned his tax records. Could it be the case that Mitt Romney maybe not as rich as most people think he is? Could it be the case that, yeah, he had this money a long time ago, but is he truly that rich, or is he living off his daddy's income, or is he living off something else that he doesn't want anybody to see? Because you're right. Most people that have a lot of money like to flaunt their money. They like to show you that they're rich. I mean, in fact, he says in the debate against Rick Perry, I'll bet you $10,000. And so, you know, they like to fly around in their jets. And then not to mention a long time ago when he took that picture with all that money hanging off his clothes and out his mouth, is that infamous picture of him and his friends or his coworkers. What's wrong with him showing people that he truly is a billionaire? Unless, of course, that's not the case.
Well, I doubt if it's the case. What he doesn't want people to know is that he hasn't worked for any money in the last 10 years, and that the money that he's earning is off of investments and different things like that. So for him to try to be a man of the people, so to speak, and, you know, try to relate to people and saying, I know what it's like to wonder if you get the pink slip. But when was the last time you really had a job?
Mm.
You really had to go to work every day. when was that last time? And so he's not going to be able to really give that a definitive answer because he's been running for something for the last 10 years.
Right.
So he hasn't had a real job, we know for sure, in the last 10 years. And that might resonate with people when you're out on the stump talking about you know what it's still like to be thinking you're going to get a pink slip. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's not true. So, you know, that's something that he's going to have to answer for.
Okay. So, so the other issue I was saying the two issues, the whole Bain Capital issue, the fact that he worked for a company, and I draw kind of a distinct parallel between the Manchurian candidate and, of course, Mitt Romney, because in the Manchurian candidate, the movie, it was a big company that was backing this presidential nominee, and so there's this big company backing Mitt Romney. And when you're talking about the way that he walks around, kind of stiff, kind of pre-planned responses, he's always acting kind of coarse. He's very disconnected from the people. It seems to me that Mitt Romney is our 21st century Manchurian candidate. And so I would like to get your response on what you believe, Mitt, why you believe people are not feeling the Manchurian candidate, Mitt Romney?
Because Mitt Romney does not speak clear. He's not likable. He's not warm. He's not friendly. He's not somebody that you think you have anything in common with. So nobody wants to talk to him or listen to him because he can come off very condescending. He can come off very aloof. And so it's just kind of like, it's hard to believe that you, in your privileged life, can have anything in common with me and my non-privileged life. And it's not that I have any knock against him and his money, because that is the American way. You make money, and you make as much as you can for as long as you can. No problem with that. The fact of the matter is that he just doesn't present himself well when he's talking to people to make people want to be around him for any lengthy period of time.
Well, you mentioned this thing, you mentioned money, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's a nice segue into this thing we know it to be called super PACs. Now, I've heard the term before. I've heard, it kind of be popularized basically by politicians of late, but none more so than Stephen Colbert. On the Colbert Report, he's taken the opportunity in his show to kind of dissect, if you will, the notion of a super PAC, the notion of how you build a super PAC, the notion of all of the loopholes that are associated with super PACs. And so it's interesting how up until this point, Mitt Romney, the person with all the money, the person that has outspent his opponents in a lot of cases 2-1, has started out in the race seeming like he was going to be 3-0, which now it looks like it's a three-way split, which means that Newt Gingrich went in South Carolina, Mitt Romney went in New Hampshire, and the other candidate winning Iowa. And so when you look at the fact that now all of this money that he was throwing at the campaign, and it turns out that the money is not what's was getting him the wins. And so that's kind of a unique or very different situation than it has been in the past. What do you think about that? Do you think that money is a deciding factor in a race?
Well, I don't know that it's a deciding factor. It has become that because of the change in the law, thanks to the Supreme Court, of allowing the definition to say that corporations are people and they can donate unlimited funds to candidates. I think there should be a cap on the amount of money that can be spent. I think there should not be unlimited funds. Like in Newt Gingrich's case, the casino guy gave him $5 million to just buy up ad space in South Carolina. And so you know, those sorts of things will taint the outcome of an election if you're easily influenced by what you see. And we know that we as Americans are easily influenced by what we see based on all the stereotypes we have of one another. So when you're bombarded with ads on television that some are downright untrue and some are distorting the truth, it's difficult for you to try to decipher through all of that. If every waking moment there's a commercial on, you're seeing an ad being put out by a person running for a political office. So it can be a tad bit overwhelming to the average voter.
You know, that's interesting because a brotherhood, a black brotherhood in the chat room has a comment, and he says that very few people understand how corporations and PACs work. It is too complicated for the present generation. And I like that comment from, and I thank you, Black Brotherhood, for that comment, because I want to introduce the whole notion of how potentially super PACs can work. And what I mean by that is simply this. If a corporation, let's say McDonald's, for example, can spend unlimited amount of funds to fund a GOP candidate or the candidate of their choice, let me say, then what's simply happening is I go frequent McDonald's, and because they're making proceeds or profit off of my purchases, then the purchases are now going and being spent on these candidates or and these campaigns, you know, I am essentially funding a GOP candidate, not even trying to. And so that's one angle on the super PAC. The other angle is that because they're supposed to be transparent, but you're not able to see them until sometime downstream. So a candidate could have collected all of their delegates by that time. A candidate could have went ahead and caused damage by that time. The lies could have been perpetuated by that time, but yet and still, the money is already in the campaign. The damage is already done. And so it sounds like to me that these super PACs will be reevaluated after this election. But it was, in my opinion, set up as one of the steps or measures to attack President Obama. But it's now beginning to backfire. What do you think?
I agree with you on that. I think the initial was meant to cause harm to the president, and what it has done is caused harm to their own Republican Party. So they've backdoored themselves into this position now where they are having to answer questions that they thought they could have blew off until, oh, let's say May or June. Now they're having to answer for in January because of the unlimited amount of money that's out there. So I agree with you.
Yeah, it's definitely going to backfire because right now at the...
Yeah, and that's what they have forgotten about this president is that, you know, he's slow and steady. He's not quick to react. He doesn't react to everything he hears or what people are saying about him. You know, that's what some of his surrogates should do, and that's what, you know, his campaign people should do. But at the end of the day, when they're ready to make their nomination and they're ready for the real season to start with these debates, I hope they're ready. Because the president has sat down with some of the meanest Newt Gingrich think he's mean. You try to sit in the room.
Now, from Mitt Romney to Newt Gingrich in the sense that if Newt Gingrich wins the 2012 GOP nomination, could this be a Obama-McCain 2?
No, because I think Newt Gingrich is a more dirtier player than McCain could ever even attempt to be. Newt Gingrich doesn't play by anybody's rules but his own, and then he changes them up as he sees fit. So the only thing that will work for the president in his favor is to continue to be slow and steady and just talk about the facts. Newt Gingrich has spent a lot of time talking about old stuff, how it used to be when he was in Washington. Well, that was a lifetime ago to some people.
Yeah, yeah.
So he can stay back there in nostalgia world if he wants to. The president can talk about what's real and what he has done today, not what he did 20 years ago.
Well, now what?
So
what about?
That's going to be the. I think that's going to be the real, you know, drastic difference you'll be able to see between the two candidates if it is Gingrich.
But you said
I think
he'll
self-implode before then, though. So I don't think he. I think he's going to self-implode because that's just what he normally does.
Well, I mean, I'm inclined not to agree with that because I basically thought he was going to self-implode by the end of the summer. Other
guys
are going to self-implode by the end of the year. He seemed to be hanging around. You remember, recall McCain kind of went in and out like that last presidential election. Then he kind of emerged at the last minute, and they kind of coalesced around him when it got closer to the Republican National Convention. And what I'm saying is that Gingrich is now getting the momentum. People have really never liked Mitt Romney anyway. And so, you know, it's kind of the, you know, Gingrich is becoming like kind of like the default candidate, if you will, right now. And, you know, as I said earlier, I think president is probably going to run unopposed or virtually unopposed anyway. But in the event that Newt Gingrich gets the nomination, if this scenario plays out to be that, then I'm essentially saying that it is could potentially be an Obama-McCain 2, Obama v. McCain 2, is because of. You remember that how Sarah Palin came into the race and how dirty and how nasty and how kind of how she took the race to the gutter? And I believe that Newt Gingrich is going to start out that way. And that's why I'm kind of thinking that, you know, if he gets the nomination, we're going to see a pretty much an Obama v. McCain too.
Well, here's the difference in that. One thing is he's already started it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already showed you what kind of campaign he's going to run. He's not going to always talk about policy. He's going to make it personal. He's going to do name calling. He's already done that. And he's already done it toward the president. So whatever he has to say about the president is not going to be new information because we know that's how he plays. Now, the only difference I'll say, if you look at the last round of Republican candidates that was running 4 years ago, I would say that was a little bit better group of candidates than what they had run at this time.
As far as resumes and as far as knowing politics, right.
This was not the top of the class of candidates. I mean, they still trying to find somebody to run.
Yeah.
And you can tell by who they have tapped to do their response to the President's State of the Union is who a lot of people in the Republican Party really wanted to run this time.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted Mitch Daniels to run. So it's almost like they've given the world a preview of what's going to come in 2016.
Right.
So I don't think Newt still being in the race. Excuse me. I don't think Newt still been in the race, you know, all that significant because he been in the room with kindergartners, and he in the sixth grade, so you know he should look better than all of them.
Right. So we're kind of closing in on this segment, but I want to ask you the question about Newt's quote unquote victory speech. It seems to me that he's still jabbing, if you will. He's still jabbing at the food stamp issue. Notice that in his closing of his speech, he talked about the president being the most food stamp president. And he also alluded to the fact that he's working for people becoming a paycheck generation as opposed to a food stamp generation. So what are you making him still jabbing at that issue? I mean, it's almost like that issue was behind us, but now he's kind of, you know, he's kind of pulling that back into the forefront.
No, he's left it there. He's wanted it to be there the entire time. That's the name-calling stuff that I'm talking about when you're talking about Newt Gingrich. You know, and to say it, I mean, you know, we used to say there was, you know, they were talking code. But, you know, he's no longer talking in code. He's outright saying how he really feels about the president. So, you know, we have to take him at his word. Now, the problem is, that's only going to resonate with a certain population. That's not going to resonate with everybody.
Right.
And so at the moment he gets into a general election, when you got people who go to work every day, who are getting a paycheck and still have to get food stamps. That's not going to resonate with them. You're talking about the man that's helping provide them with that supplement to their income.
Right.
Because they need that. And when you look at the numbers of poverty and how we have 1 in 4 children living in poverty, and
yes.
and you're talking about calling him a food stamp president, and we have children that go hungry every day, that's not going to resonate with people. So he's going to change his message. It might resonate in the primary season, trying to get his delegates, but when he get on the national stage and he want to call the president a food stamp president, he's not going to get the same response because it's going to be some working people. You got some people, husband and wife, both working, and they still got to get some supplements to their income to provide for their family.
Right.
That's the reality that we live in, thanks to him and his party, some of their policies that they have in place of why
mm-hmm.
people who work every day still have to go and get some assistance because the jobs that they used to have are no longer here and they're not paying what they used to pay.
Yeah.
So when you cut somebody's income in half, I don't, you know, you can only work so many hours a day, period.
That's right.
There's only so many hours a day you can work, and there's only so many hours a week you can work. And if all that time is not going to give you what you lost, you have to have some help.
Yep.
And for a nation and a party that proclaims to be built on Christian principles, I am appalled at the language that comes from them because they're not being Christ-like. Christ spoke of taking care of the least of these. And although that he said there will always be the poor among us, that doesn't always mean that just poor in terms of prosperity. But, you know, people need encouragement. And I understand you teach a man to fish and he can feed himself. But while you're teaching him, you still need to give him something to eat. Because
right,
if
right.
I'm hungry, I'm not paying attention to you anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
So those are, you know, so those are some of the things he's going to have to deal with. And so he says he'll go speak to any ethnic group and talk with any community. And I hope Reverend Al and Roland Martin and Ben Jealous take him up on that offer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because he's going to be in for a rude awakening.
You know, Black Brotherhood is off the chain in the chat room. He says Newt is running a campaign attacking the media. The low-educated voter loves to attack and demonize the educated people. They love to demonize knowledge, education, and rational thinking people. So it's interesting how Newt, on the one hand, wants to project himself to be a scholar, but on the other hand, he kind of catered to those people that are low educated, and they're attacking and demonizing, you know, someone that's obviously educated in President Obama.
See, the thing about that is, though, because he walks in that circle, he always appears to be the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But when he comes away from that crowd, he's no longer the smartest person in the room.
You know, we talked about all the time of how it's easy to look good in front of a whole bunch of kindergartens, or if you're sitting up in an educated man sitting in a room full of primary educated students or secondary educated students. But when you go amidst scholars, when you start hanging around and having a conversation with other educated people or other scholars, then, of course, your rhetoric won't seem as profound as it would in that setting. So because he's been around a Rick Perry who's articulate challenge, if you will, and he's been around Ron Paul, who has kind of seemed to be extreme, and those other candidates, you know, for the most part, all kind of hang around in that primary kind of, you know, area, right? When he gets ready to really debate President Obama, he's going to be up for a rude awakening.
Right. I mean, you just put him, okay, you said Rick Perry, you said Ron Paul, you know, who was previously in there, you had Michelle Bachmann, you had Hunter Kane. Probably the one that he was going to have the most trouble with was John Huntsman, but he just couldn't seem to get any traction.
Right.
And Mitt Romney is probably not a dumb person, but
he just doesn't know how
to articulate his message.
He's scripted. Mm-hmm.
You know, and whoever his handlers are, they're not handling him well. So, you know, because listening to former governor Buddy Romer, I think he could take Newt toe-to-toe.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's a sounding, you know, person. And I think sitting down next to Newt Gingrich would look like a stoop compared to Buddy Romer. Why?
Yeah.
Because Buddy Romer is not going to come off with all this other nonsense. He's going straight for the good, and he's going straight for the facts, and not all this theoretical, emotional stuff. Newt Gingrich's success over the last week in these debates has been all about emotion. He's pushed all the right emotional buttons with people. It had nothing to do with facts. It was all emotion.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events, Jima Hill Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Well, I want to say, if Mitt Romney gets the GOP nomination, and he has to go against President Obama in the general election, what do you think would be the driving issue of the campaign?
Well, it's still going to be about the economy and how we get the economy moving.
But Newt has no record on the economy. He has no record, no true record, no direct record of the economy, of fixing the economy.
Well, he doesn't really have a direct record on anything but healthcare in Massachusetts.
Right.
Which, you know, that's really all he – I mean, he can talk about his business experience all day long and running companies, but running companies and running the federal government is two really separate tracks. And for some strange reason, the average American doesn't believe so. I mean, it just truly amazes me that people think we need a businessman in the White House. No, what you need is somebody to know how to work with a whole lot of different types of people.
Right, right.
And that's the role of the president, because when you go to somebody else's country, you better know how to speak their language.
Mm-hmm.
Not just literally, but figuratively as well. You need to know how to talk. And I don't think Mitt Romney would do well outside of America. That's just my opinion. Newt Gingrich would not do well outside of America.
Right.
Because people in other countries do not tolerate the type of language and the type of tone and tenor that he tends to have with people. They're not going to do business with him. They're not even going to want to have a conversation with him. So though they try to paint the president as being conciliatory all the time, you know, and making his statement, what did he say the other night, you know, there won't be another person to bow to, whoever that person was that they said the president bowed to,
right,
out of tradition and custom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you won't be going over there, and you won't be doing business with them. You know, you go ahead on and make these declarations. Former kicked out of the House Speaker seat, Mr. Newt Gingrich, you know, for all your ethical violations that you did, you know. And I think that the media does the public a disservice because they keep wanting to say people know this already. But if I'm a first-time voter, I'm 18, 19 years old,
right,
I don't
right.
know that because I wasn't born.
Right. That's true.
So I'm relying on the media to give me the right information.
Or at least
so
ask
you
the right
can't
question.
Say everybody knows about it. Or that's mm-hmm. old news. We all know about it. No, you all know about it because you've been doing this for a while. But I'm a brand new voter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 18, 19, 20 years old. All that I wasn't paying, you know, that was before I even could pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think we do a disservice. I think the media does a disservice when they try to play like, you know. And even Newt himself, why are you bringing this up now? Well, because there's somebody out here that don't know that you left your one wife on her deathbed and you left another one for this one. It's somebody out there that don't understand that.
Right.
So.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Mitt Romney, if he was to get the nomination, he's going to have to, he claims he wants to run on the economy, but he really can't, that he really doesn't have a solid thing to run on outside of just bashing the president. That's all he ever does. He just talks bad about the president.
Well, speaking of the president,
only going to take you so far.
Well, speaking of the president, when we return, we're going to play the president singing at the Apollo. If you haven't heard this, stay tuned. I think what you hear may be surprising to you. I think the president got skills. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my
need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. So, over the past couple of days, President Obama, he actually went on a fundraising tour, if you will. He actually had an opportunity to sit down with Spike Lee and a group of people and had for a plate that I think cost about $38,000 per plate, raised about $1.6 million there, a little bit, could be plus or minus a couple of thousand dollars. Then he went on to another venue. And then he ended up at the Apollo out of all places. Now, that's right, President Obama at the Apollo. And so I want you to take a listen to the president, that's right, President Barack Obama, singing at the Apollo. Take a listen.
To know that Reverend Al Green was here. I'm so in love with you. Those guys didn't think I would do it. I told you I was going to do it. And the Sandman did not come out. Don't worry, Rev. I cannot sing like you, but I didn't. I just wanted to show my appreciation.
That's President Obama singing Al Green. Now, and what's interesting is that every time I hear the mainstream media, they talk about how the president can't connect with the people. And every time I see him on television, when he's visiting, the community, and he's out actually on the ground doing retail politics, when I see him at these venues, when all of these people of all different races, colors, creed, religions, ethnic backgrounds, sexual orientation, galvanize around the president, I cannot for the life of me understand what they mean by he cannot connect with the people. And then for him to go on stage at the Apollo and then just harmonize, as we used to say back in the day, like that president, he still got it. What do you think, Jima?
Oh, I totally agree. I don't think the president ever lost it. You know, politics is a hard game. It's a dirty game. And he, you know, had to learn how to play some of it once he got, you know, there and got in the office, you know, in terms of, you know, how people wanted to continue to run Washington. So I don't think he's ever lost it. I think some people were a tad bit disingenuous in their expectations of him as the president. I think people thought that the president's role was going to be something completely different than what it's ever been in the history of the presidency because President Obama was in office. Some of the expectations we have on this president, we've never had on any other president ever. And so I just think people, you know, were disillusioned with what, you know, with what they wanted him to be able to do for them, you know, like on a one-on-one, face-to-face, personal level. But I don't think he's ever lost. I think he's always been able at the time when it was time to get, you know, to get with the people and get the people on his side, he would do that. Because if not, you know, all of the things that he has been able to get through this Congress, whether it was when he first got in or even toward the end of last year, he had to know how to work with people.
Well, talk a little bit about his maturation process, though. I mean, over the last 3 years, I've definitely seen a change in him. And what I mean by that is that the first couple of years, it seems to me that he spent a lot of time trying to compromise, trying to believe that the people would do, and when I say the people, the Congress would do the right thing when it came to the people. But he got an up close and personal view of the impact of big business, the impact of lobbyists coming to Washington saying that, hey, you know, we need you to say no on this particular issue. And so I believe over the last, at least for me, the last 90 days, I've seen him mature and take a different direction when it comes to dealing with Congress and getting things done. He's looking at other routes to be able to get things done to help the people. So I want you to kind of talk to me what you think his maturation process has been over the last couple of years, specifically over the last 90 days.
Well, I think, you know, like I stated, I think, you know, the learning curve for him was, you know, coming into the White House and at that time having both the Senate and the House. And I don't doubt in any stretch of his imagination did he think he was going to have to fight his own party on health care. And that hurt, you know, that hurt that his own party was willing to sell him down the river like that. So because it shouldn't have taken that long and they should not have allowed the Republicans and then the upswing of the Tea Party to dictate that whole argument.
And to derail all the things that could
have
happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, I'm sure that took him off guard. I'm sure he wasn't prepared for that. That his own party that would do that to him. And so that took him a little while to come back, you know, from that. And so then after that, with all the other fights, then he figured, well, okay, if I can't beat them, let me join them. So let me work, you know, work with these. Let me show them that I'm really trying to work, you know, with them. And so then when they come in and take over the House in 2010, you know, they came in knowing they wasn't going to work with the president. And I think it was after the debt ceiling issue where he finally said, I'm about done with y'all. And so
right.
I think it took all of that. It wasn't just one thing. It was a combination of things. And at the same time, you still got these crazy people. Excuse me. You still got these crazy people out here trying to ask him for his birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of, you know, all the other things he was trying to get accomplished, you know, so and making all these radical claims against him and calling him, you know, all these things while he's trying to get governed. So, you know.
Yeah. So I want to shift gears now to something that's also coming up a lot these days, and that's SOPA. Now, for the people that are unaware, Representative Lamar Smith announced what he called the Stop Online Piracy Act. You'll hear the term SOPA, or you'll see the term capitalized, S as in Sierra, O as in Oscar, P as in Papa, A as in Alpha, SOPA. And so you'll see that. And Lamar Smith announced the Stop Online Piracy Act in late October of last year. He knew it was going to be a controversial bill, but the Texas Republican probably never anticipated the broad and fierce outcry from internet users that SOPA provoked over the last few months. It was a show of public opposition to internet-related legislation not seen since 2003. Now, if you want to know how serious this was, on November the 15th, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Zynga, eBay, Mozilla, which is another browser, Yahoo, AOL, and LinkedIn wrote a letter to key members of the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives saying SOPA poses a serious risk to our industry's continued track record of innovation and job creation, as well as to our national cybersecurity. Now, Yahoo has reported quit the U.S. Chamber of Commerce over the organization's enthusiastic support of SOPA. So, Jima, what do you think about SOPA?
Well, I mean, as I, you know, dig a little bit more into it, I see, you know, some of the arguments or stances on both sides of it in terms of, you know, the potential that it has to create more of an issue than what it was originally supposed to do. I think when it comes to something such as this, the internet and all of those things around it, and piracy and you know, people downloading stuff and, you know, you're getting movies on DVD at the barbershop that's still in the movie theater, you know, that I don't think that's what it was all intended to be.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes technology can be our best friend and our worst enemy at the same time if it's not regulated.
Right.
So we've got to know that these things have to be regulated, and we're just not doing a very good job of monitoring that. And that's probably because of all the, you know, the backdoor deals that's happening that we don't have a clue about. So I just think something has to be done to protect me, the consumer, and also to protect me, the entrepreneur, you know, the business person, and to make sure things are safe. But, you know, I don't think this group of people going to do anything with
so
they can't do nothing with nothing else. So
Right. So let me be clear for people out there that really need a little bit more explanation of how would SOPA work if the bill was passed. So it allows the U.S. Attorney General to seek a court order against a targeted offshore or a targeted website that would in turn be served on internet providers in an effort to make the target virtually disappear. Let me give an example. Let's say in the event of www.makemymusic.com, now hopefully that's not a website out there, but I'm going to say makemywebsite.com, current events, Patrick Cook. So I know that shouldn't be out there because there's my name in it. So let's say if that website exists, and the fact that I was playing music that was pirated or that was downloaded illegally, if the Attorney General got wind of that, he could potentially contact my ISP, and that's Internet Service Provider. You may hear that term used. And they will contact my ISP, and they say, take that website down. So on the surface, it has an impact just to me. But the reality is there's a lot of other connections, because this is an internet. Things are connected in ways that may not be visible to the eye, and there are links, and there are broken links, and there are other things. So because it's so much connectivity out there, it could potentially have a domino effect. So while yes, it may be the case that they say shut that internet site down, or at least cut that domain down for now until we do further investigation, but it could potentially break any other sites over the web and could have a domino effect. More specifically, Section 102 of SOPA says that after being served with a removal order, a service provider shall take technically feasible and reasonable measures designed to prevent access by subscribers located within the United States to the foreign infringement site. Now, notice most of the legislation talks about offshore because they're trying to target or trying not to infringe on the United States' right to privacy or right to free internet use or right to be able to free speech. But the reality is the language in there could potentially affect people behind the United States as opposed to overseas as well. And that is a subject to the order. Such actions shall be taken as expeditiously as possible, but in any case within 5 days after being served with a copy of the order or within such time as the court may order. So, Jima, now armed with a little bit more information about that, are you – I'm not going to say are you for and against it, but what is your opinion about the legislation in general?
I really still don't have a good opinion about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in hearing what you were saying, it still seems just a little. It seems too muddled for. I need the simple, version, not the AP class. I need the geometry 101 class.
Mm-hmm.
The first level.
Right. So that means if you have an audio or video that you have downloaded, and you may have downloaded it through a third party. You may thought the third party was legitimate, but the third party didn't get the proper access rights to the video or the audio, if you will. And if that's the case, if they find it on your site, it could potentially contact the Attorney General, and they could potentially take your site down without you knowing.
Okay.
You've been served. This is, hey, take the site down.
Did I hear somewhere that somebody said that they will cut off something or take your site down and then ask questions later? So even though that person may have said that that's what you did, it might not be true, but if they don't look for the validity of it, they just will cut your site off and then come back and find out whether or not it's true.
I mean, that's potentially how most all laws work, right? I mean, they say you're innocent until proven guilty, but if they find any kind of evidence, whether it's true or not, they're gonna lock you up. They're gonna take actions now and then to try you in court later. So this is no different,
right?
At any rate, I'm not sure of what the outcome will be, but I am sure that people are no longer sitting on the sideline when big business tried to convince Congress to pass legislation that will benefit them. And Republicans, out of all people, the fact that this Republican brought this up,
mm-hmm.
and they keep saying that to keep the government out of our lives. Well,
right.
It looks like to me that they have become a victim of their own platform.
I mean, their definition of government being out of our lives changes depending on the situation.
Indeed. It's time for another break. When we return, we're going to talk Red Tails. Did you go see the movie? We did. And we're going to talk about what we thought the movie was like. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my
need a new website, haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I LORMAGE101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift gears now to entertainment, specifically Red Tails. Now, Jimmy and I saw the movie over the last couple of days, and I thought it was absolutely wonderful. And so I want to talk a little bit about the backstory. The backstory being Lucas tried to get funding for the movie, but could not do so, mainly because of, and this came out of his mouth, not some opinion of mine, but it said that it because of a majority black cast. And the fact that he could not get funding, he ended up getting help from Oprah and Tyler Perry to help fund the movie. And of course, you've seen, if you haven't seen the movie, I would encourage you to go out and see it for two reasons. One, because if the movie does successful, he has two other movies in the balance showing the prequel, if you will, showing how it all got started. And then, of course, the one that precedes the one that's showing now, to take it to the next level. So I would encourage you to go out there and see it for that reason. But for also, I would encourage you to go see it because of the historical nature of the movie. You know, when we were coming up, a lot of times African-American history was only relegated to February in a lot of cases. I was fortunate enough to grow up in Alabama where I had African-American history pretty much instilled in me all the time through my family, through just the reading of so many different books. I mean, being, you know, close to Tuskegee, being down there reading about Booker T. I mean, it was so many things that kept me so connected to the African-American community, but it wasn't done through the regular school system in a lot of cases. So to see this in its glory and all its significance, and to see all the historical backdrop, it really provides the audience with a history lesson, if you will. And it shows the struggles, and if you all know the many struggles that African Americans go through pretty much every endeavor, and currently into this day, it hasn't much changed. Look at the presidency. But for the most part, it showed the struggle that they had to overcome, and how they all were able to coalesce and really show the world how well they could be a pilot. So, Jima, what was the most significant thing that you got from the movie, without giving too much of it away?
Well, I was reminded of the HBO movie they did years ago about the Tuskegee Airmen, and I believe it was Larry Fishburne that played in it back then. And so having something to go on, I went into Red Tails with, you know, expectations of,
just seeing a little bit more of history of how they came together. And like you, I hope that the movie will have done enough this weekend. Or it finished second this weekend. So I hope it, has done enough where it shows that the potential is there and that more movies like this will be made. Will be made. I all of a sudden have the hiccups. will be made. But I think this movie was about strength. It was about willing to go where no one thought you could go, where no one felt you should be. It was about channeling something real deep down on the inside of you to prove the naysayers wrong. And it just was, you know, a picture of, you know, some of the things we deal with on a day-to-day basis today. You know, to be the only one in the room, you know, the expectation is that they have no expectation. And so,
you know,
anything you do is considered to be great because they don't expect anything out of you.
Right. What one of the significant parts of the movie, I thought, or in its entirety, was the fact that it was a positive portrayal of the African American male, and in so many, I mean, you had, and let's be honest, you had the, you know, you still had the same complexities of complexion. You had the light skinned brother, you had the, you know, with the good hair, you had the dark skinned brother, you had the hard brother, you had the smart brother. You had that, but it still was a positive portrayal of the African American male. Now, although there were some issues, and I'm gonna say go see the movie to see what those issues were that were connected to some of the men, the overall theme or the overall driving force was still a positive nature. And so you very seldom get that out of the silver screen. The fact that you see a positive portrayal of the African-American male, and that's significant, and you can never overstate that because the fact that there is not enough of that. There's not enough of the positive portrayal of the African-American male. There's always the portrayal of the buffoonery. There's always the portrayal of the one that's tap dancing. There's always the portrayal of the drug lord. There's always the portrayal of the murderer, the person that always going around, you know, oversexed, if you will. There's always the portrayal of the dumb one. There's always portrayal of all these different characters that is it pretty much take root in the African-American male, especially when you're talking about the young mind, which has not been shaped yet and is only shaped by what they see. And so, again, I cannot overemphasize the positive portrayal of the African-American male and the success stories that came out of that and how they overcame the racial barriers and how they were invited in, you know, in a lot of different cases. I thought it was an absolutely phenomenal movie, especially if you look at the art form of the positive portrayal of the African-American male. You say what, Jim?
I agree with that. I think, you know, it shows, as you stated so eloquently, various degrees of men in various points of their lives dealing with different things, but knowing that they're there for a purpose and they have a mission to do. And so when it's time to go fight, you know, we fight, you know, and the issues that I'm dealing with will probably still be there when I come down. But, you know, for this time that I have work to do, I have to gird up myself and be prepared for battle. And I think what it showed is that in the larger scheme of life, you know, we all have things that we go through. We all have situations and circumstances. But when given the opportunity to perform and when given the opportunity to be prepared, one must take full advantage of that. And these young men took full advantage of the opportunity. Because let's not, you know, forget, and hopefully this will come out, you know, in the prequel that he's already ready to do in terms of how the, you know, this whole Tuskegee Airmen came to be. You know, what was it about, and the different colleges that these pilot programs were at anyway. You know, and so it would give us even a greater sense of accomplishment that, you know, what it took to even get into the program. I remember that one movie that Cuba Gooding Jr. was in where he was wanting to be a diver in the Navy.
Yeah, Master Chief. That reminded me of that when I was watching the movie.
Yeah, you know, and what
all one of my
he
favorites, you know, one of my
through,
all-time favorites. That's right.
Right, what all he had to go through, you know, doing stuff that no other diver had ever had to do before.
Yeah.
But he had to do it because simply because of the color of his skin.
Right.
And yet he did not allow the color of his skin to be an excuse of why he couldn't do it.
Right.
I mean, he, you know, he excelled beyond odds that were so great. And so, you know, when you look at the accomplishments of African Americans in America in its totality, the majority of our accomplishments have been all at great odds. You know, none of them have been at, you know, oh, here, go do this. You know, they'll have, you know, people believe that we've been given so much, you know, but everything we have, we fought for. You know, everything
right.
we have, we fought for. And so, you know, it's time now that we cherish it like we fought for it as opposed to like somebody just gave it to us. And I think,
right.
you know, we do ourselves a disservice when we don't take the time to go to our children's school. You know, I know you may work 2 or 3 jobs, but you have to find a way to show that you're invested in your child's life, not just to your child, but to that child's teacher, so that your teacher knows that you're invested. And that they know they can communicate with you on some level. And so because education was not something that they were trying to do for people that look like you and I. It was something that they hid, and people were killed and sold away for trying to read. And you look at how all of that came to be, how they came, how the colleges were even instituted. You know, how did, you know, what made Mary McLeod Bethune decide to start a college? Not because,
right.
you know, she could get into any other school, you know, because she
right.
saw a need there. And so that wasn't given to her. It started in a one room of a church. And so, you know, it just showed and just reminded, you know, of all of our, of the legacy and history of who we are as a race of people. And what we have endured just to be, you know, just to be a part of the different things we've had to endure. And so, and it shows some, you know, the stressors of life that, you know, can get to any of us. But we have to stay focused on what the prize is.
Right. Yeah, that movie was Men of Honor, which is one of my all-time
yeah.
favorites to understand, you know, what a soldier goes through, especially during those times. And again, you know, I also want to talk about the fact that the positive portrayal of the African American male, but there was that support structure. Terrence Howard and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s characters gave those men a support that's unparalleled today. And so when you have, you know, we talk about in church all the time, iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel. Sometimes you need that man there. I know we've grown in a culture where a lot of women are taking care of young black men, but we need to understand as black men, iron sharpens iron, steel sharpens steel. So in order for us to be there and to provide those young men support, we need to be there as men. And so to see Terrence Howard and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character support those young men to go to fight, to go to battle for those young men in so many different ways, and to stand up when it wasn't popular to stand up for those young men, again, was another a positive portrayal of the African-American male. I cannot overstate that enough to see that and to see that support structure that they provided.
Yeah, I think that was significant to the success of the program.
Yes.
That the men that was in charge and had leadership really understood what their role was, and that they walked into that in the sense of knowing that, you know, this is really dependent upon me to make this work, and I can't give the soldiers any excuses, I can't give myself any excuses. And so I think that's important. I think knowing how significant you are to the outcome of something, you know, may encourage you to be a little bit more serious about how to make it work and how to better yourself. And knowing, you know, with some of the issues he knew they were dealing with, didn't belittle, just, you know, kind of told them how to handle them, you know, so that, you know, we got bigger things to worry about than what you're trying to fight. You know, that's not
right. They had a sense of purpose. They had a sense of purpose, absolutely.
Right. Excuse me. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to stay in the entertainment genre for a minute, if you will, and talk about last week Oprah's segment that she did on Roots. It was the 35th anniversary of Roots, and we kind of caught the episode that Oprah did. What do you think about that show, Dima, for her to bring those issues back up and to kind of take a look at that 35 years later?
Oh, I think it was very significant because, as we know, Roots at the time was, when it came out, was significant to the world. Things, you know, they talk about life stopping when Roots came out, and that, you know, it was their, it was a lot of those actors and actresses' breakout role, you know, from doing that miniseries. And you know, even the white actors that played on it, you know, they Sandy Duncan said on it that she, you know, she still get people to look at her sideways because of that role in that movie.
Right.
And how, you know, she was just, she was so unliked. And she even stated she's never even seen it in its totality before. So I think that was a good idea for Oprah to do, to bring them back, to kind of bring us back to a point of remembrance. I mean, 35 years ago, who knew it had been 35 years?
Right, right.
You know, and it just seems like, wow, that was 35 years ago. And then you get to remembering, okay, where was I? I remember exactly where we lived at that time, and
mm-hmm.
and all of us gathered around the TV, and, you know, us talking about it, us having issues at school. I mean, you know, it was, you know, it was kind of difficult not to look sideways at people because it was the first time it was up close and personal, in your face like that, and that
right.
you had to that, and it forced us to look at, you know, how we got here, because as we know, the history books aren't always that full of history,
right?
And so it kind of forced us to be like, what, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then to see, you know, how those scenes were acted out. And then to hear them talk about when they were shooting certain scenes and how at the end, how they just kind of stayed in character because
right.
it was just hard to break away from it. And it's going to re-air tonight on the OWN Network this evening. So if you missed it last Monday, it's going to re-air on there tonight.
Yeah, I bring that up because we talked about Red Tails and we talked about George Lucas and the challenges he had with making the movie. And Oprah last week did Roots, but tonight, after that, she's also going to have George Lucas on her show tonight on the OWN Network tonight at 8 Central. So I would encourage people to go out there and take a look at that and look at the history of what went into this movie. You know, one would think that he made this movie a few weeks, a few months, a few years ago. But in fact, this movie was made some time ago, and it was at least written some time ago. And he had, you know, of course, he kind of modernized it with some of the recent characters. But it would be really nice to kind of get context if you go out and take a look at his interview with Oprah tonight. And nobody interviews a guest like Oprah, so you know it's going to be something special. And so moving forward, as we were talking about Roots, Demon, I asked you the question, who was your favorite character on Roots? And if did the interview tell you something from that character that you didn't know?
Who was my favorite character?
In Roots.
That's a hard one. I would probably have to say LeVar Burton's young when he was Kunta Kinte.
Oh yeah, that was mine as well. Yeah,
and probably because of his desire to show resolve for his native land.
Right, 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 right.
You know, until the bitter end, until, you know, the slaves around him said, "Please just say it."
Right.
You know,
Kunta
nobody
Kinte.
Wanted
mm-hmm.
that to continue. You know, and. Mm-hmm. When he finally gave in, you know, I felt such a sense of, you know, defeatedness.
Yeah, so I mean, it was like it permeated the entire atmosphere at that time. You know, everybody was like rooting and, you know, and holding on. It's like we were
right.
All, he was holding us all up at that time.
Right.
He was holding the world up at that time, especially all African people. He was holding us
right.
up at that time, and he was our strength. And so that's
right.
why, again, I agree with that.
And so you fast forward to all the beatings that happened in slavery and the lynchings that happened in slavery and the Jim Crow and all the beat downs, the dog hoses and the dogs and the water hoses and
lynching.
You know, just another way of beating it out of you.
Mm-hmm.
They may have gotten rid of the whip,
right.
you know, and then came the water hose.
Right.
They may have gotten rid of the water hose, and then came, you know, your textbooks that was 20 years old and no surprise
right.
in your school. I mean, so there was always another way that they were intent on trying to hold you down and make you be something
mm-hmm.
or make you conform to their world. And so, you know, and to this day, you know, he's the one that resonates with me the most because the names are important and they mean something.
Oh yes, oh
and
yes.
And so
mm-hmm.
we have to be very careful with what we name our children.
Yes.
And more importantly, what you answer to. And
oh yes.
Determined.
Right.
That he wasn't just gonna answer to anything. And so when they, you know, beat him to the point where he had to just say it just to stop it, you know.
Right.
I still felt like he didn't give up being Kunta.
Right. You know,
you might call me Toby, and I may or may not answer to you. You know,
right? Exactly.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So you mentioned the fact that the whip has changed over time. What would you say our modern day whip is today?
It's so many.
Because
we have so many vices now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are self-inflicted whips.
Right.
Our addictions.
We're beating our own self down now.
Right.
Opposed
right,
to
right.
getting beat by somebody else.
Right. So all of our addictions that we have in terms of the drugs that we've allowed to permeate our community,
mm-hmm.
The promiscuous mindset around sex and lack
mm-hmm.
of responsibility when it comes to sex and making sure we're teaching our children the best way.
Right.
Not the easy way.
Right.
So, this, you know, there's so many whips that we have right now. We've allowed our something that was pure and thought-provoking to become a mess of beats and gyrations, and I'm talking about our music world. And, you know, we've allowed it to become that. So I am... you know, so the whip may not just be from the hand of master,
right.
But, you know, you've been beat down that now you're just whipping yourself because you just used to getting whipped.
You know, when I think of whips, I also think about the black-on-black whips being used against each other when it comes to violence. So the whips of not trying to read and not trying to educate our minds. The whips of just kind of talking the way we want to or acting the way we want to. The whip of not being, not going to church anymore. The whip of not caring for each other anymore. I mean, you're right. There's so many different whips that we subscribe to today by our own free will and accord, and which is really painful to watch our community. I was having a discussion with the great Leo Baron Hicks. And, of course, he's an expert in this matter. And we were just talking about how we've talked about these issues for many, many, many moons. We've talked about the symptoms. We've given excuses for people for going out there. But we're very seldom taking action. You know, so we mentioned many times on the show about reports. The NAACP comes out with a report. The National Urban League comes out with a report, you know, and all these reports come out, but we very seldom take action on these reports. So, you know, I hate to see these whips still be in our society after all these years. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's just what it is. A whip is a whip is a whip.
Right. And you look at the amount of violence that's being recorded. I mean, who sits by and records a beating of a young person
right.
and then put it out for the world to see? Who does that?
Right.
Who is the person that is recording? I'm not even talking about the people beating up the child. Well,
mm-hmm.
who is the person standing back there recording it? And what in their world makes them think that's okay?
Mm-hmm.
At what point would that ever have been okay? And yet, at least now, once, twice a month, you have a case where you have some young kids beating up somebody and somebody is recording it and the person either ends up dying or is critically injured or something. And it's all over the internet. It's all over the world. And see, what we're failing to remember is that we are all over the world. So the world is looking at us like, how dare you
right.
try to have this righteous indignation, and your children are filming themselves beating each other up.
Right, right.
You know, so we have a lot of work to do, not just in our community, which is pivotal. We got a lot of work to do there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of work to do as a nation. You know,
yeah.
America has never really, you know, accepted responsibility for a lot of her actions.
Right.
And, you know, there's got to be consequences for that.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about another whip as we shift gears here to processed food. Now, there was a study out recently that talked about how processed food was linked to cancer. And you're talking about whips. Here's one that we really need to pay close attention to. Eating a single serving of processed meat per day might increase your risk of pancreatic cancer, a new study suggests. Experts say that cancer risk is still small, but reducing the amount of processed meat in your diet is a healthy move. Now, based on a review of 7 previously published studies, Swedish researchers found the risk of pancreatic cancer was 19% higher among men and women who ate roughly 4 ounces of processed meat per day. That's about 1 link of sausage or 4 pieces of bacon. The study was published in the British Journal of Cancer. I raise this because we talked about whips, we talked about drugs, we talk about sex, we talk about all of these whips, if you will, in the context of roots and how you know, it broke us down in the slavery time, and now we're causing our own whips, if you will. Processed food is our whip too as well. The fact that we continue to be a very obese nation, the continue that we're steady gaining weight over time, and to continue to be the highest cancerous nation in the world. Jima, when are we going to start moving away from A, eating this processed food, and then B, this obesity issue?
Well, you have several things that's working here, and it's the lobbyists of the world that has pushed processed foods on us.
Mm-hmm,
they're
mm-hmm.
in our schools more, our children. You talk about a group that's probably most affected, and it's our children.
Yeah,
because of
yeah.
what they're eating in school. I mean, they was ready to declare pizza a vegetable.
Mm.
And whose world is pizza a vegetable? I mean, really? Those are the people that represent us in Congress,
right.
are declaring pizza to be a dadgum vegetable. So, you know, there is no doubt that we are in such disarray right now, and that it has a lot to do with lobbyists and who's paying for what up in Congress. I mean, Congress used to be people that were not millionaires. The average person's salary or the average person's worth now that's a congressperson is well over millions of dollars.
Right, right.
You know, and so you have that. And so because of that, somewhere somebody marketed to us that we need to live further away than closer to. By
mm-hmm.
that I mean, everything is so far away. We're not exercising. We're not walking anywhere anymore. You don't, you know, who walks down to the corner store?
Right.
You know, where is the, do you even live by a corner store?
Mm.
You know, where is the closest store that you feel like you could walk to in your neighborhood, you know, in your community that could get you something that you really needed? You know, we don't value fresh produce.
Mm.
So it's extremely, I mean, it was some comedian, I think, just said this the other day in terms of how expensive it is to eat healthy.
Right,
you
right.
know, and when you're trying to buy fresh fruits and, you know, your vegetables and, you know, you want to drink, you know, soy milk or almond milk or some, you're going to pay twice as much. And so when you're already struggling on a very tight budget and you look at, you know, buying everything to make your own homemade macaroni and buying what's in the box, you're going to buy what's in the box because in your mind you'll get more because, you know, it's cheaper. And so they've marketed it to be cheaper. They never said it was better, but they've marketed it to be cheaper. And so, you know, now, you know, we're dealing with the fallout. We're dealing with the increased cases of diabetes and, you know, type 2 diabetes and cancer, which is running. I mean, it's like every day there's a new form of cancer. That's like, what? How do you get that? And nobody can tell you how to get it or how you got it or where it came from. You know, so you don't know how to treat it because you don't even know what it is.
So the danger right now, in my humble opinion, is the fact that the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, are in cahoots. And what I mean by that is that the Food and Drug Administration, it means the food is what we take in, and when we get sick, the Drug Administration is what's supposed to be able to prevent or to subside these issues. So if the Food and Drug Administration were doing what they were supposed to be doing, then we wouldn't have this mess going on, right? I mean, and they go out and they say they don't have the right staff. They don't have the right, you know, the right people to go out and do all the investigation when you hear these E. coli outbreaks and when you hear all these outbreaks that's happening. Well, you know, I caution people then to think about the fact that you have the Republicans saying they don't want government in anything. If you take a look at the current situation where the FDA doesn't have enough people to go out and do the right inspections or to make sure the food that they're serving, these companies are serving, are supposed to be healthy and meeting the guidelines that they put in. Well, just imagine a Republican presidency when they remove them altogether. Well, you have no government affiliation that does that. Then the issues become worse. It become triple fold, tenfold. It begins to, they begin to put us in a situation where you have no oversight. We have the regulation that's taken out of the government hands so they can do this watching. And they talk about the fact that, well, it's the parent's responsibility. Well, the parent is only going to go on about the information they're produced. And if the FDA didn't mandate that they put these labels out there, they didn't mandate they tell you that they're cloning your meat, if they didn't mandate that they tell you what the calorie intake was, then these people would have killed most of us off by now.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. And you know, the part that, you know, as you mentioned, these are organizations in terms of agencies, the FDA and the USDA, that some of these people running for president on the Republican side want to get rid of.
So all together get rid of. That's right.
Yeah, you want to get rid of the organization that's keeping your food safe. That's
at least,
it
at
where
least,
you're
at
not
least keeping
dying
you
from food poisoning.
Food. Right, exactly.
Yeah. That just doesn't make sense to me. All for the name of you want smaller government and you don't want government involved. But you want government involved when it comes to my reproductive rights whether or not I can have a child or not have a child. You want to be all up in that. But when it comes to me eating something that's going to kill me, you don't want the government involved in that. So, you know, they can't have it both ways, and we've got to do a better job of holding them accountable to the nonsense that they're talking. So, you know, it's a sad state that a lot of the diseases that we do have, you know, I would venture to say the majority of them are preventable.
Yes,
but they're
yes.
only preventable because of what you stated, the guidelines that's been for, you know, given out to these companies to have to tell us what's in these things. You have so many ingredients that you see on the box, and you're like, well, exactly what is that?
Yeah, and we talked last week about cereal and how much sugar in it. I posed the question last week, would you feed your child milk and cookies for breakfast? And then, you know, most parents would respond, no, of course not. But when they look at the sugar content of the cereal, which is equal to or more than some chocolate chip cookies, then the parent want to say, you know, what's going on here? Well, it's the fact if you didn't have those guidelines, or if you didn't have somebody with oversight, then you would essentially be feeding your child, you know, the amount of sugar that's in cookies for breakfast. And so, that, of course, that has a domino effect when it comes to behavior. It has a domino effect when it comes to obesity. I mean, there's so many factors that are involved in having the right information about what the food you're intaking, that is incumbent upon us parents and as citizens to make sure that we, like you said, hold these government officials accountable to make sure that they keep these government agencies involved in our system enough so at least we can be informed. Now, of course, big business is always going to find a way around the system, but at least it makes it a little bit more challenging for them to kill us than it has been in the past.
For sure, for sure. And at the end of the day, you know, we are all responsible for ourselves, but, you know, if the role of government is to protect, then the role of government is to protect. And so there has to be those guidelines so that I don't know how many chocolate chip cookies I can really have before, you know, I've overdone it for the day and I've increased my chances of becoming a diabetic or, you know, some other illness. And then with that, you know, because of all of that, the high cost of insurance and what it takes to care for people with these sorts of conditions, it's a lot, you know.
Yeah, it is a lot. You know, in the article it says that pancreatic cancer affects roughly 1 in 65 men and women, according to the National Cancer Institute. But because it's usually advanced by the time it's detected, the five-year survival rate is only 5.5%. So if you're diagnosed, you got a 5% chance of living. Although the cancer's cause is unknown, it's more common among people who smoke, have diabetes, or are obese, confounding variables that make it hard to tease out the role of processed meats alone. When you're combining a lot of different studies, it's sometimes hard to take all of that into account. But for you know, when it smells bad, when it feels bad, when it seems bad, it's probably bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that we've known for a long period of time that the food that we're eating is not healthy, we need to be taking a closer look at how much we intake this food, right? Especially when you're talking about processed food. And so processed food comes in all shapes and sizes. And in fact, I think I was cooking some mashed potatoes one time for my son. And I just talked about the fact that the reality is that those instant mashed potatoes are a chemistry experiment. You know, for me to come up with a box of whatever that stuff is and to put some water and heat it up and it all of a sudden puffs into potatoes, that's weird to me. And so, you know, I'm not saying that's causing it, but there's a lot of different examples of how they're making food that is unnatural. There's nothing natural about those mashed potatoes. Nothing at all. It's a chemistry experience if I ever seen one. And I'm an engineer, and I know a little chemistry. But at any rate, I thought it's important to talk about the fact that when we're talking about this whole notion of whips, you know, we talked about drugs, we talked about sex, we talk about alcoholism, we talk about black-on-black crime being a whip, but we also need to make sure that we take a strong look at our food and our health system, because it also can be a whip that's going to be can beat us to death. We're going to take another break, and when we return, we're going to talk a little about sports. That's right, the Super Bowl is right around the corner. We're going to talk winners and losers, and Jimmy's going to pick her winner for the Super Bowl. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And of course, joining me in the studio is Jima Hill Cook. And that's right. Now, if you heard that familiar voice doing one of our commercials, yes, that's right. That's the Reverend Al Sharpton. That's right. One of his favorite Twitter followers. And he talks to all the time is Jima. And that's our co-host today. That's right. You can follow her on Twitter. And that's at Ask Jima. That's A-S-K. J as in Juliet. E. M.A. Ask Jima. All right, Jima, as we get ready to close up on this last segment, I want to ask you the simple question. Who is going to win the Super Bowl?
Well, since my team just lost right now, who I was really rooting for, I'm going to have to go with my second-round person, which, I mean, they have to get past the 49ers. I'm looking for the Giants to be able to get past the 49ers, and then we go back and we have a Giants and Patriots rematch in the Super Bowl, and I would, you know, be pulling for the Giants. I just have no anything for the New England Patriots. Now, if the 49ers happen to win, either way, I'm not cheering for the New England Patriots. So
why not? What's this all about? Why you don't like Brady?
I just cannot. It's just something about Tom Brady. I just cannot seem to wrap my finger around, and I just don't like him. I don't know why.
Is he good?
No, because I like other good quarterbacks. I mean, I like Peyton Manning. I like Eli Manning. You know, I like good quarterbacks. It's just something about Tom Brady. I don't know what it is. I mean, I kind of have the same feeling about him as I do towards Drew Brees. So, you know, it's just a couple of them. Like, I just, you know, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pulling for the Giants to pull off an upset out here in San Francisco so we can have another rematch of the New York Giants and New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. And then for Eli to go ahead on and win another one so people can, you know, quit saying that first win was a fluke.
Yeah. But, I mean,
Eli is a bad quarterback, and he don't get enough props, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true. He's focused.
You know, they try to make him out to be just Peyton's little brother. He's more than Peyton's little brother.
Right.
You know, he's a champion in his own right, and it's high time he starts getting, you know, accolades that he deserves. So
you know, he's probably been in the shadow of his brother for a long time, and his brother has probably outshined him because he's been, you know, ahead of him, basically. And so because he's been doing so well, Peyton Manning, that is, you know, Eli has kind of been under the radar. He's probably been just as good or better statistically, or probably has been just as good as far as skills are concerned. But now, since Peyton Manning is totally not overshadowing him, you can really focus now on Eli, and so you'll get a chance to see him perform without being in the shadow of his big brother. And so it'll be good to see that. But I too, like you, I would love to see that rematch, because I would love to see how Brady focuses in on trying to beat Eli the second time around, because it would not be, because really Eli snatched that undefeated season from them. I mean, he snatched it from him. So,
right.
They had some bad blood with them. You know, it'll be a good opportunity. It's going to be a great Super Bowl because, you know, people like scoring. I hate to say it. I know, you know, I'm an Alabama Roll Tide fan. I bleed Crimson and Cream and for all kind of reasons. But to see the game that happened for the NCAA championship, for the BCS championship, was kind of hard for people to stomach. Now, of course, me, understanding football and understanding how rugged it should be, how brutal and how grinding it should be, for the most part, people don't really get a lot of entertainment out of that for the big game. So if you have a game like the New England Patriots against the New York Giants, of course, it will be a shootout. And so at least a whole lot will be happening in that game. So I too, like you, would love to see a championship game like that. But if San Francisco wins, the way that quarterback has been playing, I see it not being too far from that if they go.
Right. And, you know, New England was a field goal away from going into overtime. I mean, Baltimore missed the field goal in the last seconds that would have sent the game into overtime. So it wasn't like New England put a hurting on Baltimore today either. So,
right.
If they're wanting to get another ring, then they're gonna have to earn it, just like everybody else does. There'll
that's
be
right.
No gimmies this season for anybody. So,
what about basketball? Let's shift for a minute to basketball. Huh? Have you gotten into the season yet?
No, I have not gotten into the season yet because, for one reason, they're playing so many games back to back to back that it's hard to catch them, number one. And then because they're playing so many games, the players are not ready. You know, their legs are not ready collectively. I mean, you still, like we talked about last week, you have your few outstanding teams in terms of, you know, Chicago and Miami and whatnot. But players are getting hurt. I mean, Dwayne Wade's been out for 3 or 4 games now, Rose has been out for a couple of games, and now Dirk down here in Dallas is going to be gone for 4 games because of his knee and also to just work on some conditioning. And Kobe had been out a couple of games. I mean, so, you know, you just had some of your big-time players being out because of injury, and that has a lot to do, I think, with the tightening up of the schedule and having so many games. I mean, you play 4 games a week almost, you know, and 2 of those games are back-to-back. And so that's why I really haven't gotten into it. I'll probably wait till after All-Star, see where all the dust settles and see how ready people will be. And then, you know, I might be able to get into it. I'm hoping that the rumor is not true. I hear that Danny Ainge is wanting to break up Boston. Break up the big three. And I think that, you know, that's unacceptable. He's already taken away 2 of the Hearts when he sent, you know, Perkins down to Oklahoma City, and then he sent Big Baby somewhere else this season. So losing those 2 guys, you know, in terms of, you talk about heart and just playing through all the nonsense, those guys brought that to you every night. So I hope it's not true that's what he's talking about, that he's going to do that. But, you know, I know it's business for him, but
yeah, that's what it's all about.
He's got to mess up the legacy by doing that. So
I think that these guys are probably close to retirement anyway. So they're probably, if that happened, they'll probably take the trade or they'll go ahead and call it quits. And they had a good run.
But, you know,
so
everybody wants to go out on their own terms, you know.
Right,
nobody wants to be forced out or pushed out. So if that's what he wants to do, get through this shortened season, and you know, do whatever you're going to do in the off season and let the chips fall where they may. No sense in doing it now.
Right, right, right. So that's why I was so encouraged by what LeBron James did. He did things on his own terms. And I mentioned this when it happened. I said that, you know, it's always interesting if the owners get rid of the players and they make the deals to get the players that they want. But when the player does it, people
right.
want to point fingers, you know. So,
right.
Again, you know, when LeBron's decision to me was a great one, whether they win a championship or not. I think for him to take charge of his own career, which people always tell you to do, take charge of your own career. He did it. And he did it in an emphatic fashion. All right, so that's pretty much the end of the show. I wanted Jimmy, you want any final comments?
Probably, of course, as always, as we come up on yet another month, we're going into the month of February. The Republican Party has made it clear, you know, as it relates to these 35 states that have enacted some of these new very restrictive and repressive voting ID requirements, that we pay close attention in our home states to what's going on. And here in the state of Texas, we know now there's going to be some redistricting going on,
mm-hmm.
and we may lose some seats from some of the more communities, from our communities, in terms of how the lines end up being redrawn. So we have to pay attention to all of that. They say our politics is local, and I don't think we get involved enough in what's going on in our local communities. So if you can this school year, go to a school board meeting and see what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If you can this year, go to a city council meeting and see what they're talking about, see what kind of things are coming up in your county, in your city, just to be informed, because you want to be an informed constituent. So
right.
Encourage your people to go out and get the proper documentation as it relates to their voting ID requirements so we can be prepared. This will not be a cakewalk for President Obama. He will have to earn it, as we always do. And so, but, you know, in order for him to earn it, we have to do our part if we want things to continue to grow. The economy is moving.
Yeah,
it's
it
slow
is.
And
That's
steady
right.
as well. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's been – you know, constant increase of jobs, you know, less claims of unemployment. And so things are slow and steady, and the stock market is ticking up. And
mm-hmm.
those are the things they're not talking about. They're, you know, if you're not aware, you don't know those things are happening. So, yes, unemployment in the black community is double that. It's always been double. So the double number didn't come under President Obama. We've had double unemployment in the black community for forever. So, and it's never been right, and yet we've never made such a stink about it as we're making, as we're making right now. So, as you say, get informed.
Well, that's our show for today. I'd like to thank all my listeners for tuning in. And a special thanks to Black Brotherhood, who was chatting in the chat room. And also, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Don't forget to follow her on Twitter. Again, it's at AskJima, AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. You're listening to Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.